Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Rexulam Invest podcast. Every week, we write a newsletter on what is happening in the world and how that could impact on your wealth and investments. And this podcast picks through some of those highlights or lowlights. It's week 10 with Kirby and Dawn. Dawn, the Dow Jones for the month so far is up 0.13%. The S&P 500 is up 1.93%. You know, we saw a bit of a pullback on the S&P 500. You actually write about it in the newsletter this last week. The S&P for the week was down 0.26%. The NASDAQ actually ended up 1.17% weaker on the week, but still for the month up 0.59%, and year to date up 7.15%. And then eye-wateringly, over the last year, up 44.4%. That's artificial intelligence, those big AI stocks that are just continuously pushing this index higher. And we speak about that in the newsletter as well. Across Euro Stoxx 50, this is across the pond. If we look at Europe, for the week, it's up 1.37%, and for the month, up 5.22%. Then if we go across into the Nikkei 225, that's up 7.59%. That is now for the month. And then if we go and look at the Shanghai index, that's up 6.28% for the month so far. Currencies, Dawn, strengthen the rand again, 18.73. We talk about that in the newsletter as well this week, which was only the other day when it was over 19. And I had clients saying to me, but will this ever get better? And I say there's lots of volatility all the time around the currency. You've got to take the volatility. You've got to be able to sit on either sides and not touch anything and not swap money out the country at times when it's not advantageous. The euro against the rand, 20.47. Great British pound, 24.07. And then if we look across into Bitcoin, that's now hovering pretty close to $68,000 per Bitcoin. Cardano, which is ADA, that's at 73 cents per ADA unit. So those are the markets. In this week, we're going to talk about markets, which we've just touched on. Going to talk a little bit about the wealth transfer between boomers and Generation Xers, state of the nation in the United States, the state of China, and the work that they're doing, especially when it comes to renewable energy. And then I've written a piece on buy and hold, and we're going to be looking at why that is important for portfolios long-term. Dawn, let's perhaps chat a little bit about wealth transfer. I mean, the very last of the boomers are now retiring, and they've really made money out of things like property in the United States. They've got money, even if it's not cash in the bank, they're certainly real estate rich. And this allows many of them to now kind of retire. But the big thing that I find quite interesting is that there's going to be this wealth transfer that happens between them and younger generations come the next decade, right?
Yes, and it's an eye-watering amount, Kobe, you know, to the tune of $90 trillion.
Wow.
That's an awful lot of money that is going to go. Because as I say in the newsletter, and we have talked about this before, is that the last of the boomers are turning 60 this year, right? Mm. Now, the silent generation and the boomers were in 20-year periods. It's now down to 15-year periods, with the most recent ones, I think, ending in 2027, somewhere around there is the end of the next sort of generation block, as it were. But if you look at, you know, who's coming up behind it, obviously, the late boomers, which are the ones that are still coming into retirement, really sort of 60 to 65, 66, like me, right? Mm, most of our kids are millennials, effectively. Mm. Maybe late Gen X, but millennials. This is why a large chunk of that transfer is going to happen in the sort of coming into the future is to the millennials. Transfer is already happening to the Gen Xers, right? Because those parents are usually a little bit older, but it's this massive millennial and you know, maybe sort of early Gen Xers, the acquisition of this. And what is really interesting is some of the other dynamics around it is that if you look at employment, and we're talking specifically in the US at this point in time, but obviously this translates right across the sort of Western world. But in the US, there has been a fairly sharp decline post-pandemic of people age 55 that have retired effectively early, right? Mm. Sort of and making space in the employment field. And employment has been keeping up, you know, despite the net outflows of people retiring and the inflows of new people coming in. So that's really quite interesting. And the reason why you've had this early retirement is for exactly those reasons, is that the boomers were able to buy property, particularly in those accumulation years, you know, when the kids are out of the nest, there's more money on hand, and interest rates were at an ultra low level. So they could acquire even more property, pay off mortgages and buy investment properties and this kind of thing. So, and if they were savvy, when property prices and that peaked in the sort of late pandemic, hopefully they sold off some of that and bought stocks, right? And now living off dividends. Do you have a friend over in the States, and I'd sort of watch who is in that age, a little bit older than that age group. There was a time where living off your dividends was really quite hard when you're talking of a drawdown of about 2%. But with the increase in bond yields, there's better fixed income options. And of course, the growth in the stocks, which has also helped.
Dawn, it's interesting because, I mean, you write in the newsletter this week that millennials and late Gen Xers are poised to inherit some $90 trillion of assets and become the richest generation stroke generations in history. But if you think about the treatment of money, if you look at a boomer is really careful with their money. Many boomers are clients of ours. They are people that are trying to be retired, stay retired, and we are assisting those individuals on a daily basis to ensure that they have a smooth ride in retirement. That's a full-time job. But psychologically, many of those individuals are very careful with money, generally speaking. They turn every cent around twice. They want to make sure that then spend on necessities rather than luxuries. Luxuries are something which is saved for over long periods of time. It's an indulgence rather than something which is your right. Whereas if I look at Generation X's and certainly millennials, that ethos is not really there. That ethos is almost missing. And I wonder what will happen with that capital over time. Do they save it? Do they spend it? Because if they're going to spend it, what are they going to spend it on, right? Or do they go to Hermes? You know, do they go to LVMH? Do they buy one of their products? Perhaps they buy a fancy watch. Do they buy more real estate? Or perhaps they go, well, real estate's something of the past. What do they do? Do they buy Bitcoin? I'm always fascinated about how people view money and how they use money. And often it's very interesting to see intergenerational capital and how intergenerational capital translates from one generation to the next. And often parents are quite intuitive when it comes to these things, Dawn. When you say to parents, tell me how your kids will spend your money, how will they treat their money, your money, they can actually tell you because they've observed their children. They're actually very, 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 very good at explaining to you what the shortcomings are in how their kids view money.
Yes, and Kobe, I think one of the other things is that the ultra-rich in the U.S., have clearly identified this, you know, we're talking the Bill Gates kind of money, identified this potential issue is that if you, you know, give a, you know, a child who has lived an extraordinary privileged life, its whole life and never really had to work and stuff, this massive amount of money, the chances are that they will spend it. So, you know, they have made provisions to make sure that most of it goes, in fact, to something like charity. But you're dead right. And, you know, because every child is different, which is one of the trends that I've noticed when I'm writing wills and that. I mean, I always say to my clients, listen, mate, spend your inheritance, you know. And if your kids look at you sideways because you've gone and bought yourself a new set of golf clubs, just tell them, don't worry, dear, I'm just spending your inheritance, right? It's something that one of my father's golf buddies always used to say. He says, I'm busy spending my children's inheritance at the end of the day. And leave just enough money where they can turn it all into coppers and put it over your grave. That's being a little bit facetious. But at the end of the day, very few parents are leaving large sums of money to anybody under the age of 30 at this point in time.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, it used to be 21 and then it went up to 25 and now it's sort of more 30, 35, you know, because their concerns, especially if they've got a child who perhaps has got, you know, issues, is that, you know, that they'll use it on stuff that will put them into dangers, you know.
Yeah, sure. No, look, I mean, those are the things that we deal with on a daily basis. And there's different solutions for different problems. And they're often quite unique, you know, given the circumstances that individuals find themselves in. A thing that Americans are finding themselves in now is obviously the looming elections. State of the Nation was on this this last week. Biden, yeah, I mean, look, he continues to box on. And I mean, I can't believe that the Americans can't come up with a presidential candidate that at least is just slightly younger, Dawn. I just can't understand that.
I think if Donald Trump had decided not to run, then the Democrats could have risked putting in somebody else. But as soon as Donald Trump said that he was going to run, Biden had no option. You know, he's the only person that has beaten Trump. And for the Democrats to suddenly come up with somebody new was just not going to happen. I watched a recording of the State of the Nation. I didn't have the patience to watch it online, you know. So but at the end of the day, he was very energetic. But he took a leaf out of Trump's book. He made it a campaign rally speech. He's silent generation. Okay? So is Trump. I wish he'd stay silent, but that's beside the point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the more silent, the better.
God, just never shuts up. But yes. So it was energetic and it was a campaign rally. Unapologetically, is that Trump would have made his political when he did it 4 years ago, whatever it is. And so Biden talking to millions, hundreds of millions of Americans, of course he was going to make it political. And so there's a bit of hunnering from the GOP, the Republicans, but too bad. But what I found really interesting, and I didn't go into it in a lot of detail in the newsletter, that the Republicans' official response, not some little side gig, but their official response, they got junior senator for Arkansas, I think she was, one of those.
Yeah.
Red states, right? She's junior senator. She doesn't look more than 18, but I think she look kind of, I shouldn't say that, you know. I think maybe she's 30, right? But she seriously is extremely young. And they had her on a Zoom call in her kitchen.
Kitchen. But it's like perhaps that was intended that way to try and show that, listen, we're actually one of the people, perhaps, you know.
No. I mean, what it was intended for, Kubi. It's the GOP Republicans wanted to emphasize that they want women to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen.
You see, Dawn, you see, I grew up in an era where Ronald Reagan was the president of America. And this was a man to be taken seriously. I mean, I was a child, you know. I remember American presidents being people to be taken seriously. I remember the Americans being a nation that was something to be as to aspire to. This was the way that the world would operate. It's no longer like that. I mean, the American economy might be still the largest in the world. It might still be a leader in many, many places, but they're slowly, slowly losing that political clout that they had across the world. You're seeing that in how they treat China, how the European thing is falling into place. And quite frankly, if Trump gets in again, that is a fork in the road again on European relations, which we're going back to almost over 100 years when there was a similar fork with European relations. And the question is, what does that do from a global perspective? How does that do for stability across the globe? And how does that play out into investment markets and so on? And these are very interesting things to watch. So I'm watching the American, not so much the race. I watched the race. I watched the CNN polls. I watched the polls. I watched the campaign rallies and so on, just very briefly. But the outcomes are going to be very interesting, as is going to be the outcomes here in South Africa, quite frankly.
You know, as much as I hate to say it, I think that emerging nations specifically are going to have to pick a side.
Absolutely.
I think the ANC's already picked a side. And you know, it's just us, maybe DA supporters is probably the most politically correct way to say it. You know, not so much, but maybe that's the reality. China in the East, they've got a young population. They're hungry. Mm. They're not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah.
Whereas America is run by old men.
Correct.
With antiquated ideas. And you're going back 100 years to fascism and God knows what else. So, sure. You know, maybe the future of the world, as much as I hate to say it, is actually in the East, at least not annoying them. Much better to kind of fence it. And if you're going to pick a side, be quiet and pick the East kind of thing in the long term. Because I never mind a fork in the road. I think if Donald Trump actually gets a second term, it's a nail in a coffin, not a fork in the road.
I mean, you suddenly have the biggest backer of NATO backing out of NATO. so to speak, you know, saying, I don't want to be part of this European problem. You know, this European problem is, and I mean, the Second World War was really speaking the culmination point where the Americans had to be involved in Europe and then stayed involved in Europe because, quite frankly, they didn't want to mess again that was the Second World War before they got involved. So it'll be, these things are going to be incredibly interesting to watch. What is the saying? May you live in interesting times. These are interesting times. The only other thing is the Federal Reserve. I mean, the Federal Reserve is not dropping rates yet, but perhaps they will at some point this year. The big thing is obviously the labor market. They're wanting to watch the labor market. They want to make sure that the economy is on a strong enough footing before they actually stop dropping rates.
And I think, you know, we can forget about South Africa even thinking about dropping rates until the Fed starts to do so. And maybe not after their first time that they've dropped rates either, because it would probably only be 25 basis points when they do drop. Because we, you know, we've got to protect the rand at the end of the day. Sure, it isn't so. But to me, it's as if the rand keeps testing that 20 rand to the dollar level.
Yeah.
Just creeping close to it and then, no.
And then retreating.
You know, and I just get the feeling that I think the elections are going to be super important when it comes, and the outcome of the elections and the coalitions that result from it are going to be super important, because currencies, a lot of that is perception. It's not reality.
Yes.
It's perception. It's the result of hundreds of thousands of people actually trading in a currency and what they feel about that currency and the exchange rate that they're prepared to accept.
The one thing that I keep on feeling about South Africa, and I have to stress this as a feeling, I'm not basing this on data or anything, but it is that there's so much negativity that's been priced into markets that any glimmer of any hope or anything that turns out to be better news than what most people anticipate will be good for markets. It'll be good for the currency. People will find themselves offside where they end up looking and go, oh gosh, I didn't know that could happen to the currency, because it's been one-way traffic for such a long period of time that all of a sudden it goes the other way. And people go, but I didn't know that could happen. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I don't think we're going back to 3 against the US dollar. I'm not saying that.
But
I'm
maybe
just saying
14.
Everybody, correct. You know,
Could be from your mouth to the God's ears, hey? You know, I think we could all do with it. I mean, I put the burger index in there.
Yeah.
Just to give us sort of an idea of, yes, our currency has been declining steadily over a long period of time, but this is still a pretty cheap place to live.
Yeah. I mean, what Dawn is talking about here, she looks at the Big Mac index. In New York, Big Mac will cost you $5.30, 96 rand. Whereas here in South Africa, 31 bucks. If you head over to McDonald's, if you're a fan, enjoy your Big Mac. You might even afford a second one, because at 31 bucks, you can afford a second one.
Listen, not very big, hey? I mean, I ordered one the other day. I'm not a hamburger fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I actually have to order one and see what it's like. And I mean, they're pretty skinny, hey? But nevertheless, I think I'd cry if somebody handed me one of those and charged me 96 bucks for it.
You'd have it to your McDonald's from the not so big Big Mac, maybe small Slim Mac at the end of the day, but enjoy. Well, that's all for the week, folks, and thank you for listening. If you aren't already subscribed to our website, head over to rexlom.co.za and wait a second for the pop-up to appear. This has been Dawn Riddler and Kirby Lakhranji for the Rexlom Invest podcast, the home of wealth ecology. Catch you next week.